How do social media, gender roles, and ageism affect agriculture? Find out in Beyond the Field, a podcast brought to you by The Mosaic Company. Listen to the farmers who are changing the industry for the better. Visit beyondthefieldpodcast.com to learn more. As you might already know, there are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn out there right now just waiting to solve some of the world's biggest problems. If you're a farmer, that gives you about 2 billion reasons to encourage people to use biofuels. Learn more at poet.com/ag.
Some farmers in the Midwest are breathing a bit of sigh of relief this morning, finally getting a rain day and break from nonstop harvest. But in other areas, dryness wreaking havoc, sparking combine fires. A boob blasted as far north as Kansas this weekend. And as our friends in the South measure the aftermath of the most recent hurricane, 2020 really can't come to a close soon enough.
Live from the Nina, the Pinta, and the Agri Maria via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we begin our week with Machinery Pete Greg Peterson. Then it's on to Jason Lusk from Purdue University. And in the final segment, Adrienne DeSutter. Right after the news, Kirk Hins from BAM WX with a weather check. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. And now, filling in for Chip, the undisputed queen of ag media, the incomparable Tyne Morgan. Welcome, Tyne.
Thank you. Undisputed. I did not expect that because I think that is definitely heavily disputed. But I appreciate it.
It's without dispute. It's without dispute.
Well, apparently, you know what is also without dispute? How Chip likes to celebrate after an Iowa State win. I'm not sure if this day was planned off or not, but I'm pretty sure he is still celebrating from Saturday.
Well, I don't know if you can necessarily plan for a Cyclone victory this season. I mean, come on. Let's be honest. And he's not here, so he can't defend himself. Yeah, I'll just leave it at that. But yeah. Well, good for him, you know? He works hard sometimes.
Yeah, let's move on. No, I'm kidding. He does. I'm just kidding. Chip, if you're listening, I'm just kidding. I'm talking to some farmers in Iowa this morning. Davis, it sounds like some areas got some rain, others didn't. But it sounds like areas like in eastern Iowa, you guys could have used some more rains. I'm hearing several combine fires, as I mentioned. And here in Missouri, just farmers, some planted cover crops, needing the rain for things to come up. Boy, has the story changed. You know, it has been nearly perfect weather for harvest this year, but some wanting maybe just a little break.
Definitely. And the volunteer fire squad was hopping on Saturday afternoon around here. I didn't hear exactly what they were up to, but you said you would talk to Ted the Hammer, and he said there were some fires around his area. He's not far from here. Definitely dry. We got, you know, I was up this morning about 6:30 taking the dogs out and such, and it was kind of sprinkling. I would not call it a rain, though. And there were no puddles here in my area, so.
Yeah, they were calling for rain here. Did not happen. Like I said, some wanting it for just some cover crops and a bit of a break. But harvest progressing at a near record pace in areas. But what else is happening with the news on this Monday, Davis?
Well, the Trump administration offered a $1.8 trillion COVID stimulus relief package to congressional Democrats that appears to have made no one happy. The total dollar amount is above what Republicans are comfortable with, but below the Democrat price tag. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell suggested a deal was unlikely before the election, saying, quote, even if an agreement is reached, and it may be, he said, the process around it, literally the writing and all that, does take a while. The first item of priority for the Senate is the Supreme Court. Now, Tyne Senator Ted Cruz said the president is eager to move forward with relief funding, but believes election season politics will prohibit progress. And I got to tell you, you mentioned the end of 2020 can't come soon enough. The end of this election season. Oh my gosh. I'm ready for it.
It's the middle of October and I'm thankful. Maybe you wished it was the end of October, but we're getting there. We're almost to the finish line, Davis.
We're almost there. The USDA has released more details on its wildfire and hurricane indemnity program. That's WIP Plus, with more details said to be forthcoming. The agency had not previously specified a deadline for signup, which has been set for October 31. WIP Plus compensates producers for losses due to hurricanes, floods, snowstorms, tornadoes, typhoons, volcanic activity, drought, excessive moisture, and wildfires occurring in calendar years 2018 and 19. Drought and excessive moisture were added as eligible losses for the program in March 2020. So once again, sign up for your WIP Plus program ends on October 31. That's just a few weeks away. So if you want to take advantage of some of that funding, you need to get in there and get signed up, Tyne.
Yeah, and I mean, look at the relentless hurricane season we're seeing right now, just to think that some producers are still waiting on payments from 2018, 2019, and now we're looking at the aftermath of 2020. Just, I know a lot of frustrated producers out there right now.
Yeah, so many hurricanes that they ran out of names for them. They had to start all over with the weird names. Yeah.
So yeah. 2020. Again, it is so 2020.
The Chinese Ag Ministry says the nation's hog herd has recovered to about 80% of pre-African swine fever levels. China says it will increase stocks in frozen storage to maintain food security and continue to enforce strict containment and eradication measures to combat flare-ups. The country has shifted more of its hog production to large-scale farms, but says it will also encourage medium and small-scale producers to increase production. And this too, Tyne, after a short bout with the coronavirus, President Trump has refused to participate in a virtual debate with contender Joe Biden, and the October 15 spar has now been canceled. Health concerns, given the president's recent illness, spurred the shift to a virtual debate. While polls show former Vice President Joe Biden holding a lead over President Trump for the upcoming election, Trump supporters hearken to the Clinton campaign, which was also favored by polls heading into the election. Watchers note, however, Biden's lead in the polls is wider than was Clinton's at this time. And this is an interesting phenomenon here, Tyne, because I remember Chip and I were actually traveling down to Kansas City for NAFB when the election was taking place. And we were astonished once we got there. We sat down to have some dinner. They had the TV on and they're like, oh, Trump won this state. Oh, he won that state. Oh, he won that state. When everyone was calling for a landslide for Hillary.
Yeah, it seems like things are, you know, it's hard to, as we talked about with the last election, it's hard to listen to these polls when it was so wrong last time. And so have the polls really changed to have a more accurate gauge on how things are going to turn out? I don't know. But so much can happen between now and the beginning of November, Davis.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's about what I got for you today.
Okay, well, thanks. When we look at weather, we've been talking about weather. So now let's check in with BMWX. We have Kirk joining us this morning. Kirk, let's start talking about, even though Davis was nice enough to give us some rain, not seeing a lot of that right now. What about South America, Kirk?
Yeah. So we've been so dry for so long. We're talking like months dry in central Brazil. We've had some record heat. We've been record dry in a lot of areas. This is the first week where that rain starts to turn back on. So there's still some model discrepancy in terms of the weather models. However, I think a good at least 50% coverage across the main central Brazilian growing areas is looking likely of about a half an inch to an inch and a half. So I do anticipate there to be some planting progress. However, given the certain level of current dryness, I do not anticipate full go on that planting progress, and still some are going to be waiting for that as well.
Yeah, and we're hearing that, you know, La Nina is gaining strength. So is that typical of La Nina? Is that's why we're starting to see some of that happen or not?
Yes. Yeah, so typically those rains in a La Nina start turning on later in October and especially November for central Brazil. And on the flip side, as you get into that time frame, you start to see substantial amount of dryness in southern Brazil, Uruguay, and especially Argentina. And if I were looking for an area to watch through their growing season, I would definitely keep an eye on Argentina for a lot of dryness to linger for a long amount of time. Think something along the lines of 2017-18 season is looking possible.
Okay, Kirk, real quick. We didn't see a lot of, you know, we saw some rain across the Corn Belt last night. Hearing some things about snow, you think that will materialize in a couple weeks?
I think that the pattern ahead is definitely looking a lot colder. I do think those chances are going to start to increase. I think it's the likelihood is definitely more possible than not possible. So to answer your question, I think, I think it's increasingly possible.
Okay, well, maybe we're going summer to winter again. Like I said, it would definitely be 2020. Kirk, thank you so much for joining us. All right, we need to take a quick break on this Monday, but it is Monday, so what does that mean? We're going to hear from the one, the only, Machinery Pete next.
Right now, there are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn out there. That's a lot of corn, especially when you consider how many of the world's problems could be solved by finding markets for it. So, how do we use all this corn for good? POET is working on getting higher blends of ethanol into the marketplace so that demand grows right along with increasing corn yields. An increase in the fuel supply from 10 to 15% nationwide would result in a market of almost 2 billion bushels of additional corn demand for the American farmer. That's 2 billion really good reasons to encourage people you know to use biofuels. The more people understand about biofuels, the better local operations will do and the better off our planet will be. Help others understand the importance of biofuels and visit poet.com/ag to learn more about how Poet is using corn from local producers to change the world. From transforming overnight into a YouTube star to paving the way for women in agriculture, the stories of American farmers might surprise you. There aren't many places to hear the real stories of the American farm until now. Beyond the Field by the Mosaic Company allows you to be a fly on the wall in these conversations. We interview farmers from different backgrounds and regions about how their paths have led to unexpected opportunities. In spite of challenges like dated gender roles and the looming presence of social media, these farmers show that with grit and creativity, you can forge your own way. They educate the public on agriculture's impact in unique ways and inspire the future generations of farmers to keep the world turning. These stories will entertain, educate, and most importantly, deepen your connection to farming in your community. Listen to the Beyond the Field podcast brought to you by the Mosaic Company. Listen today at beyondthefieldpodcast.com.
You need harvest results, not another radio ad. So let's get to the point. Channel Seedsmen place products to perform in your fields, and the results can speak for themselves. Get yield results from your area and less yapping at channel.com/yield. Huh. I guess less talking means more time for music. Classic rock, anyone? That's channel.com/yield for local harvest results. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture. It's brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
You know, Tyne.
Welcome. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, go ahead. No, bring us in.
Nope,
bring us in.
You go. The stage is all yours, Mr. Michelson.
Well, I just wanted to say, you know, you're kind of our little ace in the hole, aren't you? I mean, you know, chips off lollygagging, and what do? You know, you figure, we'll just get whoever's not busy Monday morning. No. We bring out Tyne Morgan. Are you kidding me?
I made
Thank you so
time
much for taking
you.
The time.
Appreciate
it.
Well, you know why I did?
Why is that?
Because I knew Machine Repeat was going to be on.
Oh, you got him. In fact, he's next. We've got him on the line.
Greg Peterson, how was your weekend?
It was very good, Tyne. How about you?
Oh, it was good. Yeah, it was good. We took the girls to the pumpkin patch. Not very fall-like weather, I can tell you that. Not ideal to go to a pumpkin patch on 90-degree days. I can tell you that.
Yeah, that wouldn't fly up here in Minnesota. We would melt 90 degrees in the pumpkin patch. That doesn't compute up here.
It didn't compute here either. But anyway, some sad news this morning, Machine Repeat. John Harith just told me that Joe Morgan... So any Reds fans out there, Joe Morgan died.
Joe Morgan, oh my goodness. Number 8, second baseman on the Big Red Machine. Love Joe Morgan. Grew up watching
David,
him.
David, I told
I grew
you.
Up grew up mimicking his left elbow flap when he stood in the batter's box before he hit.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Hall of Fame second baseman.
Yeah, I could name every player on that 76 Reds team because I pretended I was them in the backyard when I was a kid. So,
was he the originator?
Joe Morgan.
Was he the originator of that elbow flap? Because I see a lot of guys do it. I don't watch a whole lot of baseball, but it seems like somebody's always doing it.
He's the only one the first one that I remember doing it. There might have been a guy, Jim Wynn, that played for the Dodgers in the 70s, a toy cannon. He maybe did it. I can't remember. But Joe was legend. Mm.
Well, you know, speaking of remembering folks, Machine Repeat, on your social media, you shared a picture from a celebration of life last week that was really touching.
Yeah, it was, Tyne. The son of Richard Lee Bogan from Jamestown, Ohio, sent me a note. Amazing picture from the celebration of life. I believe it was Wednesday in Jamestown for Richard, who passed at 81. About a week ago. And Richard was a longtime Massey Ferguson mechanic, also a farmer out there. But on the way to the cemetery, Richard's casket was pulled on a trailer behind a Massey Ferguson tractor with another beautiful Massey on the trailer behind him, two American flags flying in the sunny breeze. And, you know, just wanted to do a shout out for Richard. And also, time the we're losing so many lifelong mechanics from the farm equipment business that worked on all our tractors from the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. And yeah, it was just a beautiful picture. And yeah, just rest in peace, Richard.
Yeah, these lifelong mechanics that no matter what you threw at them, Greg, they knew how to fix it.
Yeah, and then, you know, with the equipment today, I think the best way I heard it described, Ty, and you can relate from all the filmings we've done with dealers around the country for U.S. Farm Report, but there was a retirement party for a dealer, for a mechanic at a local dealership, and some of his longtime customers went in to visit him. I think this was up in Northeast Iowa with Bodensteiners, great John Deere dealer. But the retiring mechanic sort of shook his head and said, you know, I knew it was time to go when one of the new younger mechanics came up and said, hey, we just had a John Deere 4440 come in, but I don't know how to deal with this. And, you know, tractor made from 78 to 82, and it's like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, just a workhorse, those tractors, and now everything is so mechanized, and it's awesome, and the data, it's fantastic. We can be more precise. But, you know, change is difficult in many different ways, I guess.
Yeah, losing that generation. Well, speaking of the next generation, Greg, we've been on our college roadshow for U.S. Farm Report, and last week I was at Iowa State at their food science department, and they're bringing scooping up a bit of nostalgia, bringing back a creamery that they haven't had in years. So they're scooping up ice cream. Oh, really cool story.
Awesome.
But the head of the food science department, I was telling him, I said, "Yeah, Greg, you know, who typically tracks equipment, but he says in the auction market right now, there's a lot of restaurant equipment coming up because restaurants closing and things have just been, you know, so inexpensive." And she said, "You know what? I need to look into that because that's a perfect opportunity to buy some equipment at a really good value to be able to teach our students." And we really look to do that. And so, you know, it looks like you're seeing some of that. That's a good opportunity to buy right now. But what else are you seeing on the auction market that you're saying, hey, if you are looking, now is the time?
Well, I tell you what, folks, if you brew your own beer, you'll never have a better opportunity than right now to go buy large-scale microbrewery equipment, because restaurant equipment and microbrews, I am seeing flood the auction market. That makes sense. I mean, COVID, I mean, you can't get together, so restaurants can't make it. And I'm really afraid, Tyne, here. I mean, you know, up here in Minnesota, we love our warm weather, but we're like 4 weeks away from the start of November.
Yep.
And we won't be outside then, so restaurants are going to be under pressure. So basically, you know, if you look at this restaurant equipment, if you want an industrial oven or a big, you know, vat to make your batch of awesome beer or whatever, it's pennies on the dollar. But what you got to do is go out and look at the online auction bidding platforms like ProxyBid, sites like that, and just scroll through it daily. Look ahead. You'll see these listings. And again, you know, there's not many buyers now, so you can get some incredible deals.
Well, your pick of the week, is it maybe something to brew some beer in, or what's your pick of the week, Greg?
My pick of the week would be something you would want to have a beer and walk around and inspect and smile, Tyne. It's
all nice. I'm all in.
our friends at Big Iron, their weekly online sale, within the sale, they had a huge retirement sale for a collector out of Northwest Iowa, Larry Leckband. And Larry is 87, but I tease him. I'm like, "Larry, you look like you're not even 67. But he had some incredible equipment, including a 1976 International Hydro 100 front wheel assist industrial yellow prototype tractor loader backhoe. I don't think I've ever seen one. And it brought $20,250, second highest Hydro 100 that I've ever seen. The only higher one sold actually just back in June. Mecum in Davenport, Iowa had a restored one on their collector auction that brought $22,050. So I need to give a shout out to Larry for that tractor. That was pretty cool.
Was it well taken care of? Why did you see it go over that $20,000 mark?
Just the unusualness of it. Actually, I mean, the hours listed were 3,686. I don't know if that was original, whatever, but No, I mean, it looked like it was kind of half, you know, beat on. Larry used it. He was in construction. He bought it years ago. It was just kind of an odd duck, and he used it, and there just aren't many around. So if you're an international collector, you looked at that and went, huh. If you're into collecting different things, that was one for sale on Wednesday.
Any other pieces of equipment that came out of that that you were pretty impressed with what it sold for?
Larry had another tractor, a Massey 1979 4880 four-wheel drive, 3,119 listed hours on it. That brought 16.5 time. That's the highest auction price on that 4880, 3.5 years. So, again, Larry had some cool stuff. We're actually going to be featuring his stuff on an upcoming episode of Machinery Pete TV.
Oh, neat.
Stay tuned, folks. You can get an up-close look at those tractors.
Yeah, neat. Well, Greg, when I was little, the only thing I ever, I mean, I always wanted a three-wheeler. Always wanted a three-wheeler. Never got one, a little bitter, but now we're seeing some of these three-wheelers pop up on the auction market.
Oh, unbelievable time. Last Wednesday, our good friend Steffes Group had their online auction, and an item out of North Dakota that people, just incredible. I posted this on our Facebook page, Machine Repeat page, and there were 424 comments about this. It was
a
1986 Honda Big Red three-wheeler, and it looked like it was new. I don't honestly know if it was restored or just was a, you know, barn find type thing or whatever, but it brought $7,600, which people were saying that was like triple what they were new. Now, when I was a kid, getting out of high school in 84, Dad bought one, and they were a ton of fun to drive. But I think a lot of those comments, 424 comments, were like, oh, my gosh, they were incredibly dangerous. And actually, someone commented on their tiny feel, just the reality. Someone said, well, my cousin was paralyzed on one.
Wow.
So the comments, it was, yeah, it reminded people of the 80s. How fun they were, but how dangerous they were. So it was really something to see it go for $7,600.
Definitely. Well, Greg, we're getting ready to talk about the markets coming up with Brian Grady. Seed soybean prices retreat just a little bit, or quite a bit today, but we have seen that momentum. And so are you directly seeing more interest in the auction market, and specifically what is kind of a hot item right now as we're in the height of harvest?
Short answer, yes. This has been one of the strongest third quarters into early fourth that I've seen in 30 years. So to see this market move up the last couple weeks, it's low hour tractors and combines are still driving the bus. They're very strong out there.
Greg, thanks for joining us on this Monday.
Hey, you bet, Don. Catch you later.
All right. Well, a lot more to talk about on this Monday, including there's some talk about a Biden-Harris administration possibly changing dietary guidelines to reduce red meat. How likely is that? I mean, how easy would that be? We'll talk about that. Plus, we'll get a check of what's going on with the markets on this Monday morning. That's next.
Your operation is teeming with data points, and managing that information can be tough. There's one agricultural platform that converts data points to profit. A subscription to AGI SureTrack gives your data a place to connect. Whether it's production costs or equipment performance, machine data or payroll, deploying an easy-to-use platform moves your operation forward. See what the future of ag looks like, all for free. Your AGI SureTrack dealer or territory rep is ready to help. Visit AGISureTrack.com/connect to schedule a demo or start your free trial today.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Our expert this morning is Brian Grady. Brian, we got the USDA reports on Friday. Markets were up. Now we're seeing markets retract. Does it have anything to do with some of the rains coming to South America that we heard BAMWX talk about earlier in the show?
Well, I think that gives them a vehicle to take some profits, maybe. But, you know, we had the bullish reaction to the reports on Friday. We've had very strong gains here this, you know, through summer and late summer and early fall. And I think it's just more corrected pullback. Traders taking some profits out of the long side of the market here in both corn and soybeans. Soybeans, you know, kind of just right now sitting on top of a key level, those September highs. So today's close will be pretty important from a technical standpoint. If you close above it, it just looks like a pullback at this point in time. You know, if you close below it, then we're probably going to go for a little bit more of an extended price pullback. The technical picture for corn is a little bit better right now than what it is for soybeans.
Yeah, and harvest progressing so nicely. Getting those harvest progress numbers this week, do you think that adds some pressure to the corn market, or is that priced in?
Well, for now, both the corn and soybean markets have been able to stave off that seasonal harvest pressure. And you know, Chinese demand has been a big reason for that. We'll see. The soybean selling has been active. Farmers have reason to move the soybeans at harvest time here. On corn, there's more incentive to put it in the bin. So we'll see how that all shakes out moving forward.
But you say the biggest thing to watch right now is how soybeans close today?
Yeah, I think so. Just from a technical perspective, probably be a pretty big deal today with the closing level.
All right, Brian Grady of Pro Farmer. Stay with us. We'll have much more on AgriTalk when we come back.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
America's Conservation Ag Movement would like to recognize USDA's Natural Resource Conservation Service for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to AgriTalk on this Monday. It is an honor today to have Dr. Jason Lusk of Purdue University with us today. Dr. Lusk, how's the weather in Indiana? How is campus right now as COVID's kind of changing how students are learning at Purdue University?
We had a fantastic weather weekend, that kind of perfect fall weather. It's a little warm, a little cool. Today it's a little overcast, but we have students back on campus. Actually a record number of students on campus this year, but I can't say it's normal. So mask wearing, social distancing, maybe a lot more online kind of classes, but I think we're trying to make the best we can out of a difficult situation.
Yeah, and we've been doing our college roadshow, and it's a bummer that we're not at Purdue University this year, but being on campus, Dr. Lusk, it just feels like a slow summer in some instances. I mean, you see students, everyone wearing masks. I mean, things look a little bit differently. But when you go inside and really look at some of the classrooms that are in person, it just, numbers are smaller. It's definitely different.
It is. So if you take a class size that would normally, just capacity would hold 100, we reduced basically all the classes by half. So, class would hold 100. Now we'll see 50. So, the number of students in any given class is much less. And then, because students are in quarantine or we don't want to encourage students to show up if they may feel sick. I mean, we kind of have to put, a lot more of the class online just to be flexible in response to that. But, we're doing our best at doing a lot more, I tried to touch base. I think it'd be really challenging to be a freshman this year. And we've done lots of Zoom meetings with our incoming freshmen, tried to create some, peer mentoring groups, assign our freshmen to peer colleague that's a sophomore or junior so they can get, a little bit of that human connection that we have here. I've noticed our football stadium has been playing movies on Saturdays and Sunday nights, so students can hang out on the football field and watch those. That's been kind of fun.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I've learned. I mean, no matter what obstacle, these universities are finding ways to still, allow COVID-conscious interaction, which is good to see. But at the same time, I know at some of these land-grant universities like Purdue University, research and the work, it has not stopped. And so I know you're extremely busy. But when you look at 2020 and the topic right now, everyone focused on this election. And Dr. Lusk, the Democratic vice presidential candidate, Kamala Harris, came under fire this summer when she suggested that she would like to change dietary guidelines to reduce red meat consumption. Really hot button topic in agriculture. You know, it was all over social media. But when you look at that and changes to the dietary guidelines, how easy would that be, Dr. Lusk, or how difficult would that be to really encourage less red meat consumption across the U.S.?
Well, I think it's interesting. And I think it goes to kind of show that, changes in administration matter. And I suspect if we got a Biden-Harris administration would be one that is more focused on kind of environmental sustainability sorts of outcomes. Maybe just one comment on the research side first. We've been tracking red meat demand for a long time now. I've noticed over time that there's starting to emerge a more and more partisan divide in terms of meat demand. And that's particularly true of more highly educated consumers with more liberal consumers, showing less, you know, less meat demand compared to more conservative consumers, and that gap has been widening over time. So it's not maybe surprising to see this starting to show up in some of our political debates. How easy or hard is it? Well, you know, there's a dietary guidelines committee going on right now, so that committee's already been set. And you know, the way an administration would affect that process is probably by who they appoint to that committee, and that's already going on. I mean, can they undo that now? I doubt it. you know, but that is a lever, and you know, how impactful are those dietary guidelines? It maybe affects some things like school lunches, maybe affect kind of overall prevailing attitudes towards food. I think, you know, some of the concerns people had about fat, cholesterol, that kind of stuff throughout the 80s and 90s were probably part of those dietary guidelines conversations that did have an impact on meat demand. But it's indirect, you know, it's not the kind of regulatory barrier thing. I think, you know, where you might see much more of a kind of impact is if we had an administration that decided it wanted to get really tough on certain kinds of environmental regulation, maybe even kind of climate regulation, and at least on the cattle side of things, that could have an impact depending on how it came down. So I think that's where, you know, you could see a much bigger kind of impact.
Yeah, and when you talk about climate regulation, I mean, you know, you look at the candidates right now, what are some possible impacts for agriculture if we would see a Biden-Harris administration?
I think there would be some pros and cons, at least from a farmer's perspective. You know, there could be, you could imagine, you know, policies where they try to incentivize certain, you know, practices that you know, we think might do a better job, say, sequestering carbon. You know, could farmers even be paid for, you know, adopting those sorts of practices? So, you know, at least in terms of the dollars in farmers' pockets, there are some potential outcomes like that could potentially be beneficial. And I've seen more discussions around that. And I think the likelihood of that sort of thing goes up if we get a sweep of all, you know, legislative and executive branches. I think, you know, it's more likely that we'll see that kind of move towards, you know, towards those sorts of policies.
You know, right now with COVID, a lot of discussion on, well, does the science matter? Are we listening to the science? You know, are politicians listening to the science? But when you look at livestock impact on climate change and things like that, do you think the science plays in agriculture's favor?
Well, I think, you know, one has to be, you know, objective and say that, you know, livestock production does have an impact on the environment. That is true. The question is how big and how much. And I think even like our own EPA, for example, suggests that maybe 9% of all greenhouse gas emissions are from agriculture. Maybe about 3 or 4% of that is cattle. So, you know, it has an impact. It's probably something we should look at, but we also got to put that in context relative to the other impacts that we have. And I think from my perspective, you know, one thing I think we want to do is, to the extent we want to, say, curb greenhouse gas emissions from livestock, let's make sure we do that in a way that actually incentivizes producers to adopt practices that, you know, that actually achieve that outcome. And, you know, one of my fears is, you know, something like a cow tax. We're just going to put you know, all animals are the same, no matter how they're raised and what part of the country they're raised, no matter what they're fed, you know, no matter how productive they are. I think that would be unproductive. I think we want to make sure, if we go down that route, that we have a system that actually incentivizes folks to move in a good direction.
Well, during this, you know, this spring, during the height of the pandemic, and we saw meat, quote unquote, shortages at the store, and we saw those empty shelves. You know, there were pictures after picture, Dr. Lusk, of, you know, the hamburger gone, steaks gone, pork gone. But then you had the plant-based protein that was still there. You know, people weren't buying that. So when you look at some of these trends, no matter what happens with the election, no matter what regulations are in place, no matter how we change dietary guidelines, you know, do you think it's really going to be difficult to sway appetites in a large way? Because I think during the pandemic, it proved that, well, you know, when you're nervous, when you're scared, and you think there's going to be a meat shortage, you're going to buy meat and you're going to stock your freezers full.
Yeah, to me, that was one of the most interesting things about the pandemic. In some ways, it made sense that consumers stocked up on things like pasta or rice, things you can store, shelf stable. So in many ways, it was surprising that meat flew off the shelf the way it did. It's not what I would have predicted. But as you said, people stocked up their fridges, their freezers and whatnot. And I guess it does speak something to that underlying consumer attitude. Now, we you know, interestingly, if you look at the data, some of those plant-based meat products have experienced some significant sales growth. But most of the time, that's expressed in percentage increases. And, you know, if you start from a really small base, it's easy to get a high percentage increase. I think one of the interesting things to me is in the worst part of the meat packing plant shutdowns in April and May, if you look at plant-based sales, they really didn't increase much during that period. And that's a curious phenomenon because that's the time in which, you know, a lot of grocery stores were limiting, you know, how much you could buy. And even in some cases, you know, there were you know, maybe stockouts. And so you might have expected to see a big spike in some of those plant-based sales, but I don't see that in the data. And it does, I think, suggest something about, you know, who it is that's buying these alternative products. And maybe these are not the people that were buying a lot of beef and pork to begin with. These are maybe new entrants to that market that and so they're not necessarily causing substitution away from those traditional meat alternatives. But, you know, it's hard to tell. We'll see. But I think it's been interesting to see the strength of meat demand during this pandemic, especially in light of the fact that, you know, we still haven't got anywhere close to full recovery of food service or restaurant sectors.
Yeah, and Dr. Lesser, real quick, I mean, when you look at that, when do you think we will see restaurant demand and food service fully recover, or will we?
Yeah, I'm afraid to say it may not be till we get a vaccine. You know, we were on a really positive trend this summer, and if you just drew a trend line, you would have probably predicted that by, you know, end of July, August, we would be back to full, you know, full spending. But, you know, when we started getting more cases in, you know, it was probably June and July, we started getting more states shutting down, but you know, places like California, even Texas, then that really has leveled off. And it's been stagnant really since July to, you know, here in October. Sales and food service have just, you know, held below, you know, probably 20% or so below where we were last year. And it just hasn't seen much improvement. And I don't know what's going to change that other than people just feeling safer about being willing to get out and get in public.
All right, Dr. Les, thank you so much for joining us. We're talking about the pandemic. It really weighed on mental health. We'll get into discussion about what signs to watch coming up next on AgriTalk.
You're listening to the new AgriTalk with Chip Flory and me, the handsome newsman, Davis Michelson.
Welcome back on this Monday, filling in for Chip Flory. I'm Tyne Morgan, host of U.S. Farm Report. And to wrap up our Monday edition of AgriTalk, it is hashtag Ag Mental Health Week. So we're in the middle of talking about mental health and really just removing the stigma around mental health and continuing that conversation. And so joining us this morning, we have Adrienne DeSutter. She is a farm wife and focuses on mental health on the farm. And Adrienne, it feels like this conversation has come a long way in just a couple of years.
Oh, yeah, Tyne. You know, I think you and I spoke about a year ago at this time at Farm Progress Show, and it was kind of the hot topic, just kind of putting our feelers out as to whether or not it was even okay to talk about things like mental health or depression or stress or things like that. And holy moly, have we changed in the last year after having a couple tough years. People are really starting to open up and share stories and share resources. And we've seen a lot of really great leadership as well from different organizations and media to just help, like you said, break down that stigma and become a little bit more transparent.
Yeah, there are so many stories out there. And as we're in the middle of Ag Mental Health Week, Adrienne, what's the goal? What do you want to see accomplished this week in agriculture?
Well, I think that this week, you know, this is something that you know that I never dreamed we would see, to be honest. I never dreamed we would see a campaign that focused on agriculture and mental health. You know, I grew up not involved in agriculture. I married a farmer in 2014, if I'm getting my dates correct. And my background is in mental health, is in counseling. And, you know, back then, I never would have guessed that this is something that we would be okay to talk about. But after we saw some of these statistics recently, the statistics have come out that farmers are experiencing more stress and experiencing more mental health conditions like depression, anxiety, experiencing more substance abuse, and unfortunately have higher rates of suicide than most other occupations. And so, you know, knowing those things, it was really, really important for us to get this conversation started and get some movement so that we can make sure we keep farm families whole. So I hope that that's the conversation we, I hope that's what we see this week and continue growing that that transparency and that normalization of, you know, farm stress and what the realities are.
Yeah, Adrian, when you talk about stress on the farm, I mean, stress, it seems like it comes with the job, right? In agriculture, different seasons bring on different stresses. But what would be a sign that says, okay, this stress is elevating now to a point where I need to take some action? What would be kind of the biggest signs to watch? Mm-hmm.
It's a really great question, and it's a really important point, because here's the thing. When we talk about mental health in agriculture, we're not just talking about crisis. And that's what we jump to, is that, okay, when do I know that this is a crisis? And here's the thing, that's like too late, you know? Mm-hmm. We need to start having this conversation earlier. We need to all realize that, yes, there's stress on the farm, absolutely. But we all have mental health. We all need to know where our thresholds of stress are. We all need to know when too much is too much. For example, we're in the middle of harvest right now, and we have been fortunate to have not much rain. It's just drizzling today. So my farmer husband got the morning away from the farm this morning for the first time in a few weeks. And we're thankful for it, because for us, for our mental health, you know, we were starting to see some signs recently of stress and see, you know, that exhaustion, that fatigue, that can't hardly get out of bed in the morning, that you get home at night and you can't hardly think or talk because, you know, you're just exhausted, you know? So, you know, we definitely want to make sure that everyone knows that mental health is something that we don't want to wait for those crises and for those signs of crisis. However, what you want to look for to know that maybe you're not doing enough about your stress management and about your mental health, we want to look for, when are you losing control, essentially? When you're talking about things, or you're feeling trapped, feeling hopeless, those types of things. When we see your mood changing into maybe a deep depression, more irritability, more worrisome, those are all things that when you get to the point where you don't like who you are and you're not able to fix it, that's when, again, you've gone too far and you definitely need to start seeking other types of help.
Adrian, when we talked last year at Farm Progress Show, I'll never forget, you know, your message for farmers was, listen, your worth isn't measured by the markets. Your worth is not measured by yield. And why do you think that is such an important message specifically for farmers and ranchers, Adrian?
Yeah, because, you know, our stress a lot of times revolves around finances, you know, and these uncertainties and these things that we feel like totally control us and make up who we are. And, you know, I was having a conversation with my husband a few weeks ago. We have a 3-month-old son now, and my husband had come home from a tough day and he was just exhausted and just felt like he hadn't got anything done. He hadn't crossed anything off of his list when it came to farming and to-dos. And harvest was approaching quickly, you know, so he felt really overwhelmed and worthless at the time. You know, he felt like he just didn't accomplish anything. And so our son was 2 weeks old at the time, and I handed him over and I said, Drew, what are you going to tell this boy when he comes home in 10 years and 20 years and 40 years? And he comes home and he says, I feel worthless and I feel unproductive because I didn't get anything done. You know, are you going to tell him, yeah, you're right, you didn't cross anything off, or yep, you don't have enough acres, or you don't have enough livestock? Or are you going to tell him, you're trying your best, you know, you're working with what you have, you're controlling what you can, and I'm proud of you for it? You know, and that's the conversation that we need to remember to have with ourselves, that we are more than just those numbers. We are a person. We're a father to someone, a brother to someone, a husband to someone, a daughter, you know, whatever. Worth means much more than yields and markets.
Definitely. Not much time left, Adrian, but what is the best resource, do you think, for farmers who are struggling right now?
Oh, honestly, the best resource is, first of all, seeking, you know, help with your doctor or a local therapist. But we have to remember that our real biggest resource is each other. And we need to be looking out for each other, watching for those signs, having those conversations, because we are the front line on this battle.
Adrienne, thank you so much. Best wishes to you and your family for a safe harvest. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Tyne.
All right, Davis, that wraps up this Monday edition of AgriTalk. It sounds like Ted Seifert's in this afternoon. Chip Flory's back tomorrow. It is a good start to the week.
It really is. Thanks to you, Tyne. We really appreciate it.
Listen, I couldn't do it without you and trusty Joe. That's for sure. You make my job easy. Mm-hmm. So thanks for allowing
good work,
me to host AgriTalk on this Monday. I appreciate it and looking forward to the conversations the rest of the week, Davis.
Davis.
One farm family has a side hustle. Another's spouse had to step away for it to succeed. Listen to the Beyond the Field podcast by The Mosaic Company. Hear stories from farmers whose common thread is about changing the industry. Learn more at beyondthefieldpodcast.com.